It's good to be with you. It was good to be at in-person services last week, and we're looking forward to that tomorrow. But in the meantime, you get me via Zoom today. It's a appreciate you the attention. Let's start out by looking at a part of a verse in Leviticus 23:15. This is just to set the stage of where we are right now at this moment. It says Leviticus 23 in verse 15, I'm not even going to read the whole verse. It says, "And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath." And then verse 16, "Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath." And so what we see here is a counting of seven Sabbaths, which brings us to today. Today is the seventh Sabbath in the count towards Pentecost, which we will observe tomorrow. So I just wanted to set the stage. We've counted. And as you would should recall, when we during the days of unleavened bread, the feast days, of course, we look at the New Testament application and things that happen in the Passover. And we also, from time to time, look at events in the Old Testament that happened to the children of Israel, the Passover, the exit from Egypt. And so we mostly have left the story there. The children of Israel are leaving Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, and then what happens after that? In the days from the days of unleavened bread to the next 7 weeks as they begin their journey to Mount Sinai. So we're going to today spend a little time looking at the experiences of the children of Israel, and then at the end we'll tie it into our experiences. One other point I wanted to raise and just ask a question and just to plant an idea in your mind, and that idea, have you ever gone on a long walk in the wilderness? Perhaps with a large group of people heading towards an unknown destination. So I'm trying to set the stage. One time when I was in college, and I could make this a very long story and I won't, we were camping out. It was a group from college, and we were camping out near the, well, in San Bernardino County, near a mountain. And one morning, I think it was a Sunday morning, somebody said to me, "Do you want to go on a hike with us?" And I said, "Sure." I was wearing a t-shirt, shorts, whatever kind of casual shoes I had. I had no equipment at all with me. And it turned out that the hike that they were taking was up to the top of the tallest mountain in Southern California, Mount San Gorgonio. So it's about 9 or 10 hour hike. We had no, I was completely ill prepared for it. Subsequently, when my son was in Boy Scouts, we learned about essential items you're supposed to carry with you. I had no water, no food, no flashlight, no raincoat, nothing. Just the clothes on my back, shoes on my feet. We got to the top of the mountain. Somebody had carried up this huge backpack with a bunch of lunches that had been packed for us. We got to the top of the mountain. We had a 6 ounce little, remember, can of juice. That was our only liquid from the bottom to the top of this mountain. And we turned around, rushed back down the mountain till we found a stream, which I'd later learned you should not drink out of streams and mountains. But by that time, we were so thirsty that we couldn't resist. And I think virtually everyone drank from the first stream we came to, thankfully, with to no ill effect. So that's to set the stage. If you think of it from human experience perspective, you're on a long trek through the wilderness, perhaps without enough. You're not prepared properly, and you don't quite know why you're going where you're going. So that set the stage. So today, we are going to look at some of the lessons for us from the 50 days following the Exodus, when the Lord brought enslaved people out of Egypt and brought them to Him at Mount Sinai, where they entered into a covenant relationship. So people went from, my title is, from slavery to Sinai. That's where we're looking at during these days. Let's start with a brief overview just to kind of set the stage. We're only going to look at a couple of verses in the book of Numbers. Most of our time will be in the book of Exodus. But let's turn to the book of Numbers, chapter 33. Numbers 33, and let's look at verse 3. I just want to kind of give you the dates and the setting. It says, "They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover. The children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians." So that we've already reviewed during the days of unleavened bread on the 15th day of the first month, they departed. the city of Ramses, the name of the city. I believe that's probably a later name than it was called when they were there, but it was in the land of Goshen where they resided. But they were slaves in Egypt and they were freed. And now they begin this journey. Let's look down at verse 8 just to set the stage. This verse 8 shows this. There's a list of destinations that the children of Israel traveled to in this chapter, and we're only going to look at this verse and one more. And it says they went 3 days' journey in the wilderness of Etham and camped at Marah. This is after they passed through the midst of the sea. So verse 8, so you get down to verse 8, these are the destinations that get them to the Red Sea. And then if you look ahead to verse 15, they departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. And that is, we'll see later, that's in the third month after they left. So they left in the middle of the first month of the calendar, and they stopped along the way. And by the third month, they were at Mount Sinai. So that's just to set the stage. So now let's go back to Exodus chapter 13, and we will look at a couple. I want to highlight some significant points that I think we should take note of. Exodus 13 and verse 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. The takeaway point from this is that the Lord led them from the very beginning and never left them. They were always being led by the pillar until they reached, they were ready to cross the Jordan 40 years later. We're not going to cover all of that. So this is a starting point where they were led always. They always had something miraculous to look at that was right in front of their eyes. Day and night, they could always see, they could look up and see this pillar. And yet even then, as we'll see, they didn't always really focus on who it was that was leading them, even though it was right there in front of them. Let's look at Exodus 14 and verse 30. And this is, again, right as after they had crossed the Red Sea. And it says, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses, at least for the moment. They were fully aware that they had been delivered and who had delivered them. Let's look at chapter 15, a couple of verses in chapter 15. It starts with a song. It says, then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, and we're not going to take the time to go through all of it, but I want to point out a couple key verses. Let's look at verse number 9, Exodus 15 and verse 9. And again, there's a lesson for us as we are engaged in our own journey as Christians. 15:9, the enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, and so forth. So the key takeaway from this is that enemies pursue God's people. So that is, I believe, a cautionary statement that still applies to us in this day and age. We have an enemy that is lurking and willing to pursue, and we cannot forget about that we have to, as it was saying, we have the pillar to look at in front of us, but we have an enemy behind us or pursuing us. And if we lag, if we turn around, if we drift away from the lead, then we are vulnerable to this enemy. We'll see that point, I think, in a little while. But now let's jump ahead. And I don't like to necessarily over-apply human ideas, but I think this one might give us, there's a couple of things. We heard a sermon a couple of weeks ago that was talking about the idea of a mission statement that tells something about how you're supposed to go to where you're going, and then a vision statement that's what will things be like once you get there. At the end of this message, I'll point out what I think is a good vision statement. But in this song, I think there's a mission statement. Let's look at verse 17, Exodus 15 and verse 17. And it says, this is the mission that was being fulfilled, not a human mission, but a divine mission. You will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance. So that's the target where they were headed. In the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling. So this is the Lord, the eternal God's dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which you, your hands have established. So this is what God was leading them towards, the direction they were headed. So if they were doubting where they were going to the mountain of his inheritance, to a place that God had picked out for them. And similarly, we are on a mission towards a place that God has picked and that God has, that where God will dwell. And this seems to, this is what my interpretation, this seems to say they were going to dwell where he dwells, where the Lord dwells, and where he will reign over them. And I think it says forever. Yeah, verse 18, Exodus 16, verse 18, the Lord shall reign forever and ever. And wherever he is, he wants us to be. And that means, obviously, he wants to reign over us. So we have to respond to this. So this song seems to suggest, these verses at the beginning of chapter 15, that the people were inspired. They sang this song. They had been delivered from freedom. The Egyptian army was wiped out, and they were in a celebratory mood. They were excited. And now the big question is, how long did this inspiration, how long did this excitement last? Could it last for a few days, a few weeks, a few months? We don't have to go too far to get that answer. Jump down to verse 22 of chapter 15 of the book of Exodus. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, I just told you about the story I had about going to the top of a mountain, and we had a can of juice and we had no water. And believe you me, when the time came, we hurried back down that mountain to search for water because we were thirsty. And then verse 23 says, now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, which I believe means bitter, for they were bitter. Therefore they called the name, or therefore the name of it was called Marah, which according to my margin does mean bitter. So they found bitter water there. They couldn't drink it. And so they complained. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? They looked at Moses, it's expecting him to provide an answer. So they only made it 3 days after crossing the Red Sea before they started to murmur, because human beings, a large group of people out in the wilderness, are thirsty, and that's what they did. And so verse 25, let's see. So Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. He cast it into the waters, and the waters were made sweet or drinkable. So they could now drink the water. And it says, and there he tested them. So this was a test. Oh, no, the next verses were the test. It's the first of a couple conditional statements that we will see. Verse 26, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord, your God, and do what is right in his sight. So they're told what they should do. It's conditional. If you do this and give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you, which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your God who heals you. So this was an offer of protection from disease if they would heed the voice of the Lord. So this was the first of a couple tests that we're going to see in these chapters between during these 50 days between the Exodus and arrival at Mount Sinai. So now we're going to jump ahead. So that was all 3 days after they left. Now, the next chapter, chapter 16 of the book of Exodus, we jump ahead about a month after the Exodus. Because you will see in chapter 16 and verse 1, it says, and they journeyed from Elim, and the congregation of the children came to the wilderness of Sin. An interesting name. I don't think it's called Sin because of the English word sin, which is between Elim and Sinai on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from Egypt. So we saw from Numbers chapter 33 that they It clearly states they left on the 15th day of the first month. And this says, now we're 1 month in. So they've been out in the wilderness for a month. They've had a chance to get settled into their travels. And so let's see, after this, perhaps now they've developed a little bit more of a sense of calm and confidence that God was in charge and things would be fine. And so they'd be fine with it, right? Well, maybe not. Let's look at verse 2. Then the whole congregation, not just a few, this says the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. So now they have another complaint. And the children of Israel said to them, oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the pots of meat. So now this is about food. The last time they complained, it was about water. This time they're complaining because they're hungry. And hunger is something that will get people's attention. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So they missed the point that God had a mission for them, that he was bringing them somewhere for a purpose. He was leading them, and they did not have enough confidence to believe that God could get them all the way through to their destination. So they complained because now they not only did they not have meat, but now they're looking back and saying, well, maybe we had it so good when we were slaves in Egypt, at which sometimes you have to kind of wrap your mind around that one. So then let's jump down to verse 4 of chapter 16. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. I don't want to get too much involved in the details here in chapter 16. I'm going to just summarize. But they were told that each morning they had to go out and gather manna for themselves and their household. Each household had to go out and gather manna. They did this each day for 6 days. But once they gathered it, they should eat what they gathered. Don't try to save any overnight, because if you keep it overnight, it will go bad and be rotten and smell bad, and you have to throw it out. Don't keep it overnight for the most of the days. But on the sixth day, they were told to go out and gather a double portion of manna, this food, from heaven, and they would keep it overnight on the sixth day, because the seventh day they should stay in their tents, stay in their homes, and not go out, because the seventh day is the Sabbath. So this is instruction and miraculous intervention. God was going to make sure that food rotted on six of the days, but not on the seventh or on Friday. So there's in that weekly cycle, on the overnight, from the sixth day into the seventh day, food would not spoil, but you don't go out and gather. And still, a few people pushed the boundaries and went out, or some tried to keep the food overnight, found out it went bad. I think they learned that lesson pretty quickly. And other people went out on the seventh day thinking they should go out and gather, and it wasn't there. Now, these people, as you recall, had come from slavery. And a friend recently shared an article about, and they pointed out that in the ancient world, slavery was very common. People would be slaves and they would just do what they were told, but they weren't used to keeping the Sabbath. And so these people, when they were enslaved, it would appear, did not have an understanding of the meaning of and the specialness of the seventh day. And so they went out on the seventh day to try to gather, and there was nothing there, and God was not happy with them. So this was a test for them, built around food from heaven and the seventh day. All right, let's go through this. There's more that could be said about this. Verse 35 says they were given bread from heaven for 40 years. So this manna, once it started, went on for the whole rest of the time until they crossed the Jordan. And there's some events in the book of Joshua that we won't go into. Psalm 78 and verse 4, Psalm 78, verse 4, we won't turn there. I like the wording there. It says, men ate angels' food. That's an interesting way that they look at it. And we don't have time to turn to the book of John, chapter 6, verses 30 through 35, where there's a tie-in to these verses where Jesus points out that he is the bread of life. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. There's a connection between the bread, the real true bread from heaven, and our Savior. But that's a concept we aren't going to have time to explore today, but you might want to take a look at that at some point. So now let's look at chapter 17. So as we move through these chapters, chapter 17, and again, it says, they continue on their journey. They come in verse 1, 17, 1 to Rephidim. There the people in verse 2, chapter 17 and verse 2, there the people contended with Moses. So there was a contention. They were quite unhappy about this, saying, give us water that we may drink. They sounded like something very demanding. It's like, you got to give us water. They were very insistent. And Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord? So it wasn't just Moses who they were arguing with, but they were not trusting the Lord who had led them, was still leading them, who was still feeding them. They would go out in the morning and have manna, but they would argue with Moses because they didn't have water. And so this place, again, was Massa and Meribah, meaning, let's turn down to verse 7. I'm kind of cutting short the story. Verse 3, the people thirsted there for water, and they murmured against Moses. Why have you brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children? So again, they brought that up, that Moses must be trying to kill them. And so the Lord says in verse 5, go on before the people, take with you some of the elders, and take in your hand a rod with which you struck the river, which was back in earlier chapter. Behold, I will stand before you, and there on the rock in Horeb, you shall strike the rock, and the water will come out of it that the people may drink. And so they called the name of the place Massa and Meribah, verse 7, which means, tempted or temptation and contention. So despite everything that they had seen, the people still doubted. They did not understand what it was that God was doing with them and for them. So there was more contention, more complaining. This was maybe a step beyond complaining. They were contending that they were thirsty again and this shouldn't be happening. So somebody should do something about it. The next verses in chapter 17, we're not going to go too far in. It is interesting. It says verse 8, now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And there is a story there about the children of Israel going out. But what I wanted to also consider, if you would, we're going to come back to Exodus chapter 17 or 18, but let's look over at the book of Deuteronomy just for one verse. If you go to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 18, I think there's a lesson here that we might want to keep in mind. Let's start in verse 17. Deuteronomy 25, verse 17. Remember what Amalek did to you on the way as you were coming out of Egypt. So they were attacked by the Amalekites. How he met you on the way and attacked your rear ranks. So they came in from behind where the children of Israel were going. And all the stragglers at your rear when you were tired and weary and did not fear God. So interesting, perhaps they were beginning to doubt and wonder and straggle. I like the word stragglers here, and I think this is the only time this word appears in the Bible. So there's a cautionary message there as God's people are moving forward, following the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire, and with their looking ahead. And some people that said they didn't fear God, and they were the stragglers, the people lagging behind. This is a little bit the way I would interpret it. The people who weren't keeping up, they were falling behind And those were the people who were vulnerable to attack. So the Amalekites, the enemy, remember we were warned that the enemy would pursue. That was in Exodus 15. It said the enemy would pursue. These are new enemies. They came up on them and they attacked the people at the rear. Perhaps the people, it said, who didn't fear God, perhaps the people who weren't really with the program, and the people who were the stragglers. So there's cautionary message there for us as well, that we shouldn't be the stragglers. The rest of this chapter does talk about the victory that was given when Moses held up his hands, or he was assisted, then they were given victory over the Amalekites. And so again, God did defeat their enemies and provide them the victory. But the lesson I wanted to point out is the people who were first attacked were the people who were lagging and falling behind. So this is the warning message that I think we need to take into consideration. We're going to jump ahead to chapter 19. Chapter 18 has some useful information about administrative practices and principles that were taught to Moses by his father-in-law, Jethro, but we're going to skip that for today. And we're going to jump ahead to chapter 19, because this is really the crux of where we need to go in the time that we have remaining. Let's look at chapter 19, and we'll set the stage in verse 1. It says, in the third month, after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day, they came to the wilderness of Sinai. And I've looked at some commentaries and different descriptions about exactly which day in the third month this is. There seems to be a consensus that it was at the beginning of the third month of the Hebrew calendar. But I can't prove that with my limited scholarly credentials, but it seems plausible that this was at the beginning of the third month. And just to set the context for you to help you get oriented where we are today in May 15th of the year 2021, to help orient you, you say, well, what month are we in and when did the month start? There is a website that I went to that had a Hebrew calendar, and I believe that's credible. It said the third month started during this year, the month of Sivan, I believe is how you pronounce it. It started this past Tuesday, May 11th, on our calendar. So on the calendar we use, the third month of the Hebrew calendar, first day would have been this past Tuesday, May 11th. Today, May 15th, is the fifth day of the third month. So we are still towards the beginning of the third month. And of course, as we mentioned at the beginning, we are 7 weeks into our countdown to the day of Pentecost, which is tomorrow. So now let's look at what happened at Mount Sinai, because this is important. Let's look at Exodus 19, verses 3 through 6. Verse 3, and Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. This is important. God was bringing these people, or the Lord was bringing these people to him. This was, and I don't know if I want to call it, say it was a calling, but it was intentional. God was bringing these people someplace for a purpose, and it involved a contact with, a relationship with the Lord. It says, now, therefore, verse 5, Exodus 19, verse 5, now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice. So notice the word if. This is conditional. This is an agreement that they were was being offered to them, but it was conditional. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure. And I wish that we had more time to explore all these terms, but this is referred to them, a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. Everything belongs to God, but God especially wanted to treasure these people, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Now, a nation doesn't make itself holy. People don't make, we don't make ourselves holy. Only God can do that. But they were to be a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So this is what God offered. Here's the offer. If you obey me, then you will be a special people a special treasure, kingdom of priests, and a holy nation. So verse 7, Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. So Moses came and told the people, here's what God is offering you. And this is really, it's kind of amazing how short this statement is. Then all the people answered together. So it was sounded like, I don't know, as close to unanimous as we might get, and said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. A few simple words, they made a commitment that they, as a people, would do this, that they wanted to be a holy nation, and that they wanted to be a special treasure, and that they would do what God said. And so Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. So the Lord made a proposal. They said, we accept. And those words went back. But the proposal was not just all that the Lord had already spoken, and looking back to the past, anything God had said in the past, we're going to do. This is a broader statement when you look back up in verse 5, where it says, if you will indeed obey my voice, there's no time limit on that. This is a statement of people who are agreeing that they would do whatever the Lord told them. And the church has a booklet on the new covenant that also has an extensive section on this old covenant. And it talks about that they were agreeing that whatever was spoken, whatever was said by the Lord, they would do. And then, because they wanted to accept this, did they fully understand what they were agreeing to? Sometimes I think a lot of us enter into covenants and agreements. We don't always anticipate all of the various ramifications, but they had agreed to this covenant. All that the Lord had spoken, we will do. And let's look at verse 9. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. You know, faith comes by hearing. So the Lord was going to come in a thick cloud and speak to them. Let's see, let's look over briefly. We're not going to spend much time on chapter 20, but I wanted to read chapter 20 and verse 1. Sometimes we read the Ten Commandments and we skip this verse, or we don't focus on this verse. Exodus chapter 20, verse 1 says, and God spoke all these words, saying. So they had just agreed that they would do whatever they were instructed to do. And it says, then God spoke all these words, saying. So these are the first words God speaks to them. And then look down at chapter 20 and verse 18, because this is important. Now the people witnessed the thundering. So this was after the Ten Commandments were given, and we're not going through those today, but it's important. I think all of us have spent time looking at those. Verse 18, now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, and the sound of the trumpet, the mountains smoking. When the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. They were awed by this, I think would be the right word. Then they said to Moses, you speak to us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. So now they're saying, this is more than we can handle, to hear the voice from the mountain in this awesome display of power. And they then said, Moses, we will listen to you. And so, again, this is from the booklet that the church put out in 2007 about the new covenant. But basically what they were agreeing to, instead of listening to the voice directly from God, they would listen to the prophets and those that God sent to speak to them. So that was part of the covenant, apparently, that they agreed, okay, we don't want to hear these words from the mouth of the Lord anymore because we are too intimidated. We will listen to the prophets. That's what they said. History will show that they didn't necessarily live up to that, but what they were planning, or what they had agreed to, that they would do all that the Lord had said. I think that was when they agreed to this, to the covenant. So now, how do we wrap up? I could recap. I don't think I want to take the time to do that because we're trying to at a time schedule, but we've looked at a lot of things where God revealed himself. He revealed where they were going. He gave them protection. He provided for their needs and fed them. He taught them. He tested them. Now, as we wrap this up, let's say, how does this apply to you and me and to us and to God's church today? And so now for this, we will move ahead to a few verses in the book of 1 Peter, as we will see similar concepts are introduced in the book of 1 Peter. And I think this will help us look at how this ties to us. And again, I'm not even going to read the whole of chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 says, you also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house. So this is Peter now talking to the church. You're being built up as a spiritual house, a holy priesthood. Does that sound familiar? To offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So we are to offer up spiritual sacrifices as a holy priesthood because we're being built up as a spiritual house. Let's jump down to verse 9. These, again, are similar concepts. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. Again, I'm not going to try to prove it today, but I believe we could accept that you can't make yourself holy. God can make you holy. Maybe we'll hear more about that tomorrow. But you're a holy nation, his own special people. So again, you didn't call yourself either. God calls people into his church. And I would have to believe that virtually everyone who's hearing this message has been called and has been given at least an invitation and to become special people. Why? Why? What does he want us to do? That we should, that you may proclaim the praises of him. So we should praise him. We should, our lives should glorify him. We should do that in how we live and how we treat each other and how we act and what we say. Because he called you and me, and the individuals that he's called out of darkness. The ancient Israelites were called out of slavery, and we've been called out of darkness, and a dark, dismal world that's lost and confused and doesn't know God. And we've been called, where does it say, out of darkness into his marvelous light. And so that's the calling that we have. You know, Israel was called as a nation from slavery to come into to Mount Sinai, and then later, Mount Sinai, and then later into another mountain in Jerusalem, Mount Zion. But you were once not a people, verse 10, it says you, who once were not a people, but now are the people of God. So again, this continues this concept. As Israel was not a nation when they went into Egypt, they suffered a lot, and then they were brought out of Egypt, and they were brought into, invited into a relationship with God to become a holy nation. It said, but you are now the people of God who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. So there's a lot more we could say. We have obtained mercy, obviously, through the sacrifice of our Savior Jesus Christ, and that we have understanding of his plan and his purpose for all of us. And that we are called into the marvelous light. And so much more, hopefully, of this marvelous light will be revealed to us. I'm trying to get everybody to look forward to the Holy Day services tomorrow. I do look forward to being together with many of you tomorrow when we can gather in person, where we can meet together and be taught and instructed. But I thought it would be helpful for us to look back on these 50 days, this 50-day journey from slavery to Sinai. There's a lot more lessons we could probably draw out of this in the time I had. This is at least an introduction. So I appreciate your time and attentiveness, and I'm thankful that I had the opportunity to speak to you all. And I hope and pray that you have a profitable rest of your Sabbath and a holy day tomorrow.